chicky-chan. If you're all alone and you're getting whooped, honey, he'll show up and he'll back you up. He can be Ralph Macchio, Mr. Miyagi, Jean-Claude Van Damme is tough, but he can't compete. Jackie Chan is he. He's in your TV.
We're all loving Jackie Chan on our TV. It's the Day Trippers. Brendan says he's from a different bottle. We've wondered at times if he was on the bottle this season. But the heartening display against Mourinho's league leaders had most Liverpool fans wrestling with a strange and unfamiliar medley of emotions. Was that really hope in your heart? Could that really have been positivity and optimism warming your cynical soul? I'm Trev Downey, and joining me in the bunker to look back at the two most recent games, ponder the matches to come, and engage with whatever the listeners have decreed are Andy Young, Dave Thomas, pod debutant David Hartery, and Phil Casey. Right, let's begin with a look at the most recent games and what seems to have been very much an upturn in the form of the Redmen in general. The deserved win against Villa at the weekend was followed by a dominant display last night against the top side in the league. Now, last week I asked the fellas around the table if the second half of the season improvement thing had any merit to it. Brendan and the lads have gone to great lengths to add a little bit of credibility to that idea. Liverpool are fun to watch again, Andy Young, aren't they?
Yeah, they're great at the moment. I suppose going back to the United game and things when Brendan changed things, we started to see a team a bit more like last year, and now it's starting to really come together where we're performing well in patches, maybe not over 90 minutes, but I don't know how many times last season, even over the 12 game run of wins, did we put 90 minutes together of really high intensity, like enjoyable football. So it's just good to see it again, like, you know, you can kind of picture now them putting a run together, whereas say 8 weeks ago that was impossible to imagine.
Yeah.
And it's happened now, maybe like the Swansea game and a couple of other previous games in the last 4 or 5 weeks where you don't want the final whistle to go. So that's all good again.
David, welcome to the bunker. Can you comment on what Andy said there? It doesn't seem as fanciful now to think about actually going on a run, or it doesn't seem as wishful thinking, at least, because when you see a performance like that against a team that, as Andy says, lasted over 90 minutes, you would have a little bit of hope looking forward to the rest of the season.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. But I think, like, Brendan's thing is always that he's a coach foremost, and I think that coaching takes a while. Like, we saw last season when he had time to coach players, the improvement they made. But I do think after Champions League ended, the fixtures did thin out a bit, like not as much as you probably would have liked over the Christmas act, but they thinned out a bit. I do think he got to spend a bit more time in the training ground with people over Christmas.
Yeah,
people got to take a bit of a break, got to rotate a bit of the squad, things changed around, players coming back. I think it is kind of coming together for him. I think that we could go on a bit of a run now.
Yeah. Dave Thomas, that's a fair point, isn't it? He's had more time with his players on the training ground, and you know, you could argue that we're starting to see the benefits of that.
Yeah, you'd hope so. I mean, I think that he has also landed on a system and personnel which he can work with week in, week out. You know, he's not trying to find his best side or his best system. You know, he's landed at this, you know, what is it, 3-4-3, or, you know, and kind of the same 11 with one or two changes, which if you think back to when we went on that run last season, you know, for the final 14 games, he basically played the same 11 week in, week out, with maybe Alan coming in for Henderson or something like that, you know, small changes, or Alan coming in for Coutinho. So I think that's where Brendan is very good, is when, you know, he lands on what he thinks is going to work, and he works that really, really well. And, you know, small changes then throughout the game. So as Dave said, you know, he is a coach first and foremost, and he is an excellent coach, particularly of attacking play.
Yeah.
And I think he's starting to demonstrate that actually, given the right personnel, which is a different conversation about Brendan completely, but given the right personnel, he's actually pretty good defensively as well. I mean, I think that, you know, one shot on target from Chelsea last night, you know, on the back of, you know, a couple of clean sheets in the last few games, shows that we're making improvements there. So lots of positives, lots of things to be really happy about. And I think it does bode well for the second half of the season.
Same. Phil Casey is over in the corner.
Hello.
He has a new setup where he doesn't have to play with the other children anymore. He's got his own table and his own microphone, and he's just happy. And he's kind of looking over his shoulder at us regularly.
Yeah, yeah.
You happy there, Phil?
Yeah, just making sure.
Like, Liverpool's right. almost irrelevant.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right, well, I'm going to use you to start off the next topic.
Do I not get to say how wonderful Brendan is?
Well, I ask you, no.
Because I won't.
I don't really want
there you
to.
Go.
Yeah.
I think he's just I think, going back to what we said.
You're not going to bring us down straight away.
I'm not bringing you down. I'm just saying that there has to be a level of realism that comes into this as well. We've played absolute muck for the since we played Arsenal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've gotten probably just about par for the results that you'd expect over that time period. Aston Villa are shite, like, do you know what I mean? Let's be honest about it. Sunderland are cabbage. Leicester we should have battered, right? You know, the one good spark out of this whole thing was the Chelsea performance last night. That showed something else that hasn't been there all season long.
Did it make you even slightly happy?
It did, of course it makes you happy.
Yeah. They destroyed Swansea, Phil.
Yeah, but Swansea have gone to fucking pants since the middle of December as well. Look at the record.
Yeah,
but they're still a good side.
They're a classic. Swansea are a classic side that falls down the table and gets relegated.
But the fact of the matter is, for the first half of the season, we weren't beating any of those sides.
No.
So that's an improvement, so you have to acknowledge that.
Well, if we weren't, then we wouldn't have any points on the board at all. So, you know what I mean? Like all we've done is that we've actually started coming back to par. If anything, it's a recovery.
I'm noticing that.
What's par to you, then?
We should be beating those teams.
But what's par, like top four?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good thing.
But we haven't got top four
yet. None of us are saying we've been so shit. Win the league, like.
We've been so shit in the first half of the season because of Rodgers that we're in a shit position. Now he's turned around, and he has to turn around. To save his job, he has to turn around. We talked about this. Mm. And I said the only way he saves his job is if he gets top four at the end of the season. And I stand by it. And it's still a massive ask. No matter how good we were and how good the performances are, even though we played very well at the weekend and beat Aston Villa, right? All the results, no results went our way, and we're in the exact same position in eighth on Monday morning as we were the previous week when we were talking about, well, now we've got a chance to come back against things. We need a bit of luck and also to put a run of form together to get top four this season. And that, wherein lies my criticism of the whole thing.
Cool.
There's such a run of fixtures coming up now that we'll actually get a true measure of how good the team has turned itself around. And if we come out the back end of those fixtures with positive results, then yes, then he has turned things around. And I think it's a fair reflection over the next eight games as to where we actually are and what he has actually done to the team as opposed to the last eight games.
Well, to be fair, I don't think anyone said we'd turn it around. I was just asking if you're happy, like, you know.
I am happy. Yeah, I must be happy. Can't wait to get on the
really, it really comes to, I think the physical distance between you and Dave Thomas now has
absolutely
made it,
ruined it.
I think it's made it even more pronounced, you know, between the yin and the yang. But anyway, Phil, the progress of the defence is pretty encouraging, even for a negative curmudgeon like yourself.
I'm not a fucking.
Let's.
He's going to challenge you, and then he didn't know what he said. So
let's fold in a few of these things into it. We can
an omelet.
Well, yes, like an omelet, like a defensive omelet. Talk to me about Sacco. You usually end up chatting about Chan. Talk to me about Mamadou Sakho and what you think he's adding to the team.
But look, again, we've got a defensive system that finally works this season, and genuinely works. Like there's no getting away from the fact that we've the best defensive record in England since we went with the back three in Old Trafford, and we lost John Glenson to injury tragically.
You know, we'll get to Johnson.
There's no getting away from that, right?
Yeah.
But like, it's also down to the personnel. Do you honestly think that we would have as good a record if you replaced Sacco with say Lovren? You know what I mean? Mm. No. And what he does is, because he looks awkward and ungainly, that stands up against what he actually does on the pitch. He's actually really calm in terms of what he does. He always seems to be aware of the players around him, and he tends 90% of the times to take the right choices when he's on the actual ball itself. Apart from that, he's a fucking physical specimen in terms of a defender. Like, he's not getting bullied by anyone.
Yeah.
And he's got a great awareness about him. Like, and he's like any player, the more games he's got over this little run, the better he's gotten in each performance as it's gone on. And we were talking, everyone has talked about leaders and leaders in the defence and the whole lot. He's standing up. If you look at the back three, even Skrtel, they're starting to stand up and show real leadership qualities in the way they're playing the game. There's none of this talking that they aren't covering, or one fella's not covering anymore. Even you saw last night, you know, if Skrtel went to something because somebody got around Chan was tucking back inside and covering there.
Yeah.
And then if the same thing happened the other side, Sacco was coming around and Skrtel was going out. And you know, for the first time since I can remember under Rodgers, there's a cohesive defensive framework going on. The players are aware of what they should be doing in that piece. Yeah. And But you can't judge the players in isolation. Sacco looks better when he has Moreno beside him, and Moreno looks better when he has Sacco beside him. And similarly, whoever's played down Chan's flank, be it Manquillo or Markovic, there's been a great interaction between the two of them. And we just don't, we're not vulnerable, as vulnerable as we were down the flanks as we have when we've played the other combinations.
Because the unit works.
Exactly.
Dave, I know you wanted to chat about a certain ex-Liverpool player in relation to another member of that defence, Emre Can, and the comments on him. What? Talk to me about Emre Can, if you want to talk to me about the way in which he was probably a little bit over the top pilloried, I think, for his slip.
Yeah, well, for me, the improvement in the defence has correlated with Jean going in the defence. So I think Sacco's been very good, but I think Jean has taken it to another level again. And for me, if you're watching him, and this is what frustrated me a little bit with Carragher last night, is, and he's had two pops now, one at Sacco and one at Jean, and I just don't understand. First of all, I don't think Carragher in a lot of ways has a lot of credibility in terms of the way the modern defender is being asked to play. Mm. He was never a ball-playing defender. He relied pretty exclusively on being pretty smart positionally and last-ditch brave tackles. And that's not what Jan is going to do, and it's not really what Sacco does too much either. You know, they play far more proactively. They're much more tactically switched on. And Jan, for me, is a Rolls-Royce of a player. And I can't understand how you can watch him and pick him out as anything other than just sumptuous in that role as on the right hand side. Do you like sumptuous. That, Andy? You like that? Listen, I have a major man crush on Emre Can. So, but I mean,
it's
for
turned
me,
into an M&S ad. Yeah, sumptuous defender. Yeah.
50 Shades of Gay. I thought it was excellent now, and I thought he was excellent last night. After, and he's, it is true. To be fair to Carragher, he did roll back a little bit, and he said there would be moments in a few of the games where he's looked a little suspect. But for me, I think you turn that on his head and you say, he's a 20-year-old central midfield player playing at centre-back, and he works the game out. Yeah, Wimbledon, you know, when they played Wimbledon, that's a game he probably hasn't played before, and he worked it out. Chelsea last night, he's playing against Hazard
and Costa,
who are probably the two, along with Fabregas, that attacking unit is the best in the league, and he worked it out. So I think you can flip the negative side, and for me the positive column is just so strong versus anything the Carragher's going to pick
powerful
and sumptuous.
And now a list of adjectives,
and his hair was tremendous.
Divine. He's a god of a man.
David,
a modern day Apollo.
Before this gets messy and Casey takes it down a dark path, in the middle of those two guys, we have Martin Skrtel, who, let's face it, had lost his way quite a bit in the early part of the season and looked like he always had a mistake in him. Is it over-egging it to say that he's really come on a lot and he actually looks not just competent but pretty solid at the moment there in the middle?
Yeah, well, because I think the benefit of a good coach is that they put people in situations where their strengths are illuminated and their weaknesses are hidden.
Yeah.
And I think when we're saying about Jan and Sacco being great proactive defenders. Skrtel is shocking at that. He's truly terrible at grabbing a game by scruff of his neck. But the fact is, both of them are pushing the line up. Like last year, him and whoever he was playing with would just push back, pack back in on top of Mignolet, no space for everyone. Whereas Jan and Sacco want to be out. They want to be out in the 18-yard box. I mean, the two of them doing that means that Skrtel can kind of sweep up then. Yeah. When the stuff comes in behind, he's there. And he's the free player. When he's always the free player in the front three. He's always there. There's always space for him. He doesn't have to be man-marking anyone. He can just be there to ping balls out. He's great at heading the ball. He's good at winning duels. He's good at covering tackles. And that's all he has to do now. He doesn't have to go and mark anyone or grab the game by the scruff of the neck. He has to just get the balls coming in over the top, head balls out from crosses, head balls out from corners. And that's what he's good at, and that's all he has to do now. Keep it simple for him. I think he'll be all right.
Yeah. Andy, the other beneficiary, I suppose, of this new setup is Mignolet, another man who looked like he was a bit of a write-off, let's be honest. And last night, and on the back of the Villa display, he's been solid enough, hasn't he?
Yeah, the Villa game where the save from Benteke and then the punch followed up was just so un-Mignolet-like.
Yeah.
It was. He's clearly gaining a little bit of confidence now, and the pressure, the spotlight's clearly off him because he hasn't made a mistake in a few weeks. Yeah. And he's benefited from some good saves, and he'll enjoy that. And I suppose if you have three centre halves as well, less reliance on him to come off his line, which he's not comfortable doing. Although he still attempts to do it.
Yeah.
In fact, he's not too far away from a big mistake again. And I used to say it all last season. Yeah. There's a mistake coming. He's getting away with it. It was his kicking a lot last year. But Yeah, of course, he's benefiting from the three centre-halves, and that's really working out for us at the moment. And, like, I mean, the love in for Khan and Sean or Jan, we call him Jan because Dave...
Jackie.
He's Dave's best mate.
And
Sacco, like, is unbelievable. Like, you know, people are getting very carried away.
You're not having that, no?
No, I think the two players are... I think they're brilliant players, but Jesus, like, let's calm down here. Like,
yeah.
For them to play as a trio, it's a lot easier, you know. As Dave says, it hides Skirtle's frailties, and the other two boys are really benefiting from, you know, from the extra body there, you know, because we are Calamitous back there, bouncing balls around the box or anything. We are Calamitous, but the what's really helping them more than anything is how hard of workers Moreno and Markovic are, and even Coutinho flying back. The amount of ground Coutinho's covering, tracking back.
Did you have that feeling about an imminent calamity last night? It's the first game in ages.
No, because it's like so much possession, and you knew Chelsea could hurt you.
Yeah.
You knew Chelsea weren't going to start throwing balls in on top or awkward balls, high balls in. You knew that wasn't going to happen. But like last night, I felt nothing like other than Liverpool were going to win the game.
Yeah.
Other than you just know Chelsea getting attacked, they could hurt us. But against Villa, yeah, I was shit myself. Mm. Especially that 20-minute period when they brought on your man Gill and Wyman. Mm. I thought, we're fucked. You know, and it just seemed to... And thank God that goal came, because you just could see Villa scoring, like, you know.
Yeah.
But going back to what you're saying, like a defence that's been so porous for so long will always take a long time to, you know, to remove the doubts that the fans will have. So there's an element. I watched the Villa game back after watching it the first time around, and when you sat back and watched the defending, I remember watching it, like you said, going, Jesus, every time there's a free kick or kind of going, Jesus, what's going to happen next? And Mignolet was coming for everything. And the one thing that stood out for me in the Villa game was mentally he seemed to throw his shackles off and come out and come for every single cross and was winning so many of the crosses, and it seemed to help the defence, because they weren't, like what you're saying, they weren't sitting even on the corners and the free kicks, they weren't dropping as deep as they normally would, and they were prepared to push onto the players and give him a bit of space because they knew he was going to come. It's about consistency for him to do that, because if he does, then our defensive line can play that maybe two or three yards just a little bit higher again and have faith in that he's going to come.
I also think that defences can see chances. Yeah. I mean, obviously, we played the best defence in the league last night, and we should have scored four goals. You know what I mean? I mean, they were making mistakes. I mean, Terry let a ball go through to Courtois, Gerrard closes him down. If that's Skirtle and Mignolet, we're talking about on this pod as if, like, oh, there's a fucking another calamity. Like, I think defences are always going to... And I think, I agree to your point that you're watching them and you don't yet have that confidence that they won't concede.
But it's great because they're gaining all this confidence, and even if Lovren is snuck back into that trio,
where's Sacco gone?
Joe Marks,
he might benefit from the three lads back there as well. You never know. Lovren's not the bad player that everyone has seen.
Well, I was going to say on your point about Coutinho, Moreno, and Markovic, doesn't that just go to prove that at least 50% of our defensive problems have been system? And getting players to do that work do that work around them, and actually not, you know, there's loads of things that have changed. Not playing Gerrard as the defensive midfield player, not playing two brain dead fullbacks, you know, not playing allowing Coutinho to come back and do some of the running in the midfield rather than stick him on the left wing. So I think 50% of it is systemic, and then 50% of it is, you know, playing players who are better than the ones that we were.
A massive plus in Brendan's column, and I'm gonna criticize the fuck out of him, but anyway, a massive is the use of Markovic as a wing back. Yeah. He has to take immense credit for putting him there. I know whether that was true intention or whether he just wanted to get him into the team initially, because remember he went in the League Cup game left wing back, and from there on he's played him as a wing back as such, right? But that's he deserves huge credit for putting him in there, and also recognizing that when you play with the wing back system, you don't necessarily have to play with actual defenders.
Yes.
Because the aim of that is, as you said, you're worried with the three of the back going back a good few weeks, Andy, was that often if you play fullbacks there, they drop deep and it becomes five at the back as opposed to three at the back, and you allow teams to come onto you, or you don't get as high up the pitch as you should be doing with the wing backs and the idea of the wing backs. Yeah. And the one thing Markovic does is his work rate's been phenomenal.
Well, actually, seeing as you've introduced this now, let's go on and talk about our non-brain dead fullbacks, as Dave would have it, and talk to me about Markovic in that way you're chatting about. Neil Kavanagh was in touch with us saying, wondering, are we sacrificing the attacking strength of Markovic so that he can play in that nominally defensive role? There's kind of a contradiction there, because he's one of our best attacking threats too, isn't he?
He is, and like, going, because we're taking the two games, if I thought Markovic personally, the Villa game was arguably his best game for us.
Yeah.
He was everywhere in the pitch that day.
Yeah. And whereas last night, not so much.
Last night, what I liked about Markovic last night, I didn't think he had a particularly good game last night, right? Mm. But he never hid. So when things went going right from in the first half, he kept trying to do the things that he was trying to do, and an immense credit he deserves for that, because that's a mentality thing. If he was there back in September when the chips were really down and he was doing absolutely deplorably for us, right, he wouldn't have been shown for the ball or looking to go, because that's what was happening at the time when he was on the pitch. Whereas this time around, he kept showing, he kept trying to do what he was good at, and eventually, as the game wore on, things then started happening to him. And you know, that's, he had a great battle with Felipe Luis down the left hand side, but like, going back to the Villa game as well, he was fucking a colossus for us in that game. The amount of work he got up and down the pitch, and even covering inside through the centre as well, you know, that was a real coming of all the games that he's played so far. That was the one that truly showed that this kid is more than capable, a more than capable wing back, and arguably like is one of the best at playing that wing back in Europe at this stage. And that's that's like a massive amount of praise. But when I think of the teams that are playing three at the back, that's, he's your ideal. That's exactly what you want from your wing back.
But also, I think a little bit of the premise of the question, I don't think we're sacrificing his attacking talents, because I think his attacking talents are better in this role that he's playing now. I think if you play him further up the field, I said it on last week's pod, he's not the type of guy yet, he's not confident enough to beat a man on the 18-yard box. But what he is very good at is beating a man on the halfway line and carrying it 20 yards and giving it to someone who's going to beat the man.
He likes to put the ball out in front of him, as opposed to Sterling or Coutinho's way, or Lallana, where they have very quick feet and they can just sidestep and get away, just a little bit of space.
Yeah.
Markovic's his strength is just putting the ball out in front of him.
And he's a lovely little snidey prick as well, which I liked about him last night. You know, he won us a few free kicks. You know, he was niggly with Felipe Luis. He was winding the Chelsea guys up. Yeah. He was big, he was strong. I thought that was really good last night.
And it's actually at the start when he came in and he had that interview where he was talking about, I can become the best player in the league and all that.
Yeah, you loved that, didn't you? You enjoyed
it. I was thinking, this is a cocky fucking asshole. And I never imagined he'd be such a hard worker.
Yeah.
I never imagined that he's going to get stuck in there. And like, Brendan's asked him to play a position and he's just took it on.
David, to go back to a point the Phil made there, to see him and Moreno on the far side, but Markovic in particular, even losing the ball high up the field, it's wonderful when you compare it to the guys who've been there before, to watch him make up ground, track back and actually get there to put in a tackle, or at least get his body in the way. Like, that side of the game, nobody expected that from him.
I think when I signed him originally, I thought, oh great, like, he's a bit of a flair player, kind of like got a bit of Modric air off my puck, that kind of a player. But like, he was just harrying people, nipping at him the whole time. Kind of like Coutinho was a bit when he first came in, and his defensive side of his game wasn't great. Like, you couldn't fault him for effort. But I do think the wing back has been the making of him, because I think he was terrible the first start of the season. But I think the pace of English game got to him a bit. I don't think he wasn't used to having that little amount of time or space in the front three. But I think having a little bit extra time on the wing, a bit extra time to think or to compose himself, I think going forward, that's the best place for him.
And what about his counterpart in the far side, Moreno? What sort of a shift do you think he pulled in over the last two matches?
I haven't made up my mind about Moreno. When I see him, sometimes I think he's incredible. Like, he's great for tracking back and that kind of thing. But like, sometimes the stuff he just does is just mad. Like, he scored, what's the goal he scored? I think it was against... There was a give and go against nearly missed it. There was a give and go with someone on the wing, and he hairs into the box. And I was like, that's the entire left wing completely empty now. Like, what are you doing? Like, but then he scored, so I was like, oh brilliant, you're fucking amazing. Like, well done. Like, but then it's just like, I'm sure the defender's sitting there going, why is he here? Like, he just does mad stuff all the time, which, like, when it comes off, I'm like, well done, that's brilliant. Like, but when, like, it's a very high percentage game he's playing, I think, a lot of the time.
I think the good thing about him,
gambling,
he is a bit mad, and he does have Russia blood to the head, but that tends to be in the final third, and he doesn't get beat. And a lot of that is Sacco, mind. I think Sacco has made him look a lot better defensively. Yeah. But he doesn't get beat. He doesn't get brushed off the ball. He doesn't get beat for pace. He makes great recovery tackles. I think, you know, as a defender, he's very good, you know, on one-on-ones. Positionally, I think he's suspect, and I think you're right, he does lose concentration. He does have a touch of the Enriquez when it comes to, like, doing mad stuff.
Nah, he's not, no.
No, he's better. I'm not saying he is Enrique. I'm saying he's got a touch of whatever Enrique is dropping into all these young Spanish players' drinks. He's had a bit too much of it at the moment.
The lotion.
Paul Suso's gone out today, so I think Marino better watch out. He might end up in the dungeon.
The way he was going on about Chan and Sacco, that's my Moreno, because I'm loving that player at the moment.
Oh yeah,
I think he's a great
he's sumptuous
he is sumptuous
because he looks like Alonso and Gerrard. Tell the truth, it's like it's the combination of your favourite players, isn't it?
But it remains to be seen whether he can be a long term left full when we revert back to a back four eventually, because I mean nobody kind of has been successful in the league with three at the back, so eventually we're going to revert back, you know. It'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, I think the other thing, I think he's a real goal threat. I think if you could just work on him a little bit, he could actually get 5-6 goals a season from that position. Like,
well, come here, isn't it like, given the amount of shit left backs we've had for fucking donkeys at this stage, right?
Yeah,
is it like, we're talking about small flaws that can be relatively easy fixed.
He's 20 years old.
He's 20 years old.
You know what I mean?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and he's a Sirocco last year. Like, God.
Already you can tell he's the best left forward at the club in probably 20 years.
Yeah, I can't think of a better one we've had in a long, long
bloody hell.
Since Julian Dix, definitely.
No, look, he's got, like, Jesus, there's not a position, he maybe, but there's not a bad part of his game, really.
No.
Ability was.
Well, okay, when we're talking about it, every time, I know we'll touch on Lucas as well. Touch Lucas. not as gruesomely as the fans did. We were touching on Jen.
You
caressed Lucas over the performance last night.
Yeah.
But, you know, looking at Moreno, we talked about Chan, we talked about Coutinho, we've mentioned Sacco, right? You're just looking at, they're so young. Like, in football terms, they're so young as players. And, you know, if we can manage to keep hold of them, you've got an incredible, you know, base to build a decent squad off of. And this, ultimately, is when FSG were saying that this is what they were looking at. This is, you know, young players who could be potential superstars in a few years' time. When I look at Chan and look at Sacco, and you start thinking of the way Guardiola likes to play, you know, you're looking at two centre backs that would walk into that team because they're so good on the ball.
Yeah.
He's not thinking, first of all, how good are they defensively. He's thinking, what will they add when we're in possession of the ball at the back?
And whisper it quietly, they're all committee signings.
That's exactly where I was going to go.
You must have read the agenda, didn't you?
I could not put it down.
Yeah.
Sorry, 50 Trev. Shades of agenda.
But to follow on, and I suppose as a kind of counterpoint to what you were saying earlier on, which is kind of in the negative column for Brendan, that they are guys who've been brought in on his watch. Chan, Sacco, Manquillo, Moreno. He's brought in Markovic as well. Lallana, who looks to be doing okay. You know, there is a move towards a young team there that could really develop over the years to come.
Absolutely. And I suppose Dave would say, like, they're committee signings, right? I've said here when we were debating it, like, the committee includes Rodgers. You can't get away from that. If you look at Ayer's most recent interview, he's more or less put the final authority on the signing that Brendan has to agree with the player, regardless. So he's, in one way, he's putting it all on Rodgers.
Oh, it's quite pointed.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, listen, there's a committee here that, you know, help him make a decision on what player he wants to sign. But ultimately, it's the manager who's deciding who comes in the door. So if that's the case and the club are putting that out, then Rodgers has to take the praise for the good players that have been signed, in as much as it's not a case of, well, Rodgers signed Lallana, Lovren, whoever else that hasn't worked out for us, Lambert, the rest of them, right, and Balotelli, but the committee signed, you know, these lads. He is part of the committee. The committee signed all the players. End of the day. And, you know, I would say that the identification by the committee, and it goes back to scouting and everything like that, that's been poor. In you know, for our big signings that you have to make, the ones that really have to work out. Dave's point, Balotelli had to work out for us, Lovren had to work out for us, and they haven't worked out.
Well, I also think that if
the two of the biggest reasons we had such a disaster at the start,
the two,
they were relatively big money, and there was a lot of trust put in the two players, especially with Sturridge being out, and then Lovren was the new man that was going to be permanent at the back, and it just snowballed. It just snowballed from the two of them not hitting the ground running.
Because they are the two players that if you look at everything we did in the summer and you're saying, who are the two players that go straight into the first team? It's Balotelli and it's Lovren, right? Mm-hmm. Based on the immediate needs. Probably Moreno at left back, right? And they didn't work. The other thing I would say, and just to, you know, sorry, not to bring it down, but just to be cautious on this, is someone not being good until January is still a failure of a transfer in terms of the impact they have to have on the season, right?
Depends on how good they are from January.
Right. But you know what I mean? Like, I mean, we can say, oh, look, they're coming good.
Doesn't matter where.
But it's January the 20th. Do you know what I mean? So we're out of the Champions League and we've made top four a very difficult thing. Yeah. So I think, and to be fair to FSG, I think that's the way they look at it at the end of the season. They will say, well, we'll judge the season as a whole. And yes, these players now look good for the future. But were they the right players that we needed, given where we were coming from, given who we lost and what we needed to do this season? So you've got to take a more holistic view. But it's definitely encouraging that these younger players are beginning to perform.
David, I know it's, generally speaking, a dangerous thing to be looking at what Brendan says, because, you know, like he is fond of his guff, is Brendan. But, like, it was interesting to read his most recent comments in the wake of that game last night. And he talked about... He was glorying in the defensive magnificence, right? I think he actually used the word magnificent. But what he also mentioned was, and he kind of fell for the guy. He was talking about how at the start of the season, all the things that they had done to make this team good, they were unrecognizable. This system that he had tried to build up was unrecognizable. The players looked unrecognizable. He really sounded like a guy who was lost for the first half of the season, and hopefully now he's kind of finding his way back again. Would that seem to be the case?
Yeah, well, like, I think he had continued his systems that he was using last year. And I think he was just like, I think he was just dumbfounded as to why they stopped working. Right. I think he was like, well, this exact same system worked almost to a T last year. But even when Suarez was out and stuff, we still kind of got by with the systems that he was playing. I think he probably did have a bit of a crisis of confidence where he's just like, why is everything suddenly stopped working? Because we did have, like, on top of players being terrible, we had an awful lot of bad luck as well.
But
like, constant
match,
injuries and poor decision making, poor mistakes. So I think there was an element of the divine about it. Like, I was just thinking last night watching us play, I was like, there must be a bit of residual Catholic guilt, because I was like, this is punishment. This has been punishment for last season. This season, to make up for all, we enjoyed it so much last season. There has to be some kind of thing. So all the Hail Marys paid off, and now we're back to where we should be.
I love a bit of religion in the past. Getting back to the actual side itself and away from the shape of it, Andy, is it fair to say that Henderson with Gerrard ahead of him is probably the way that we're going to go and hopefully have a chance to win a cup this year? Is that our go-to sort of arrow in the middle there behind the striker?
Yeah, you'd like to think that Gerrard playing as a defensive midfielder now is finished.
Yeah.
And I think enough comments have been put out there, and Gerrard might find himself rotating with Coutinho a lot, and depending whether they got injuries, you know, whether Lucas gets an injury or Henderson gets an injury, you wouldn't know what he'll have to do, bringing Alan back or moving Shannon to the middle. Who knows? But yeah, I think if everyone's fit, that's where Gerrard's going to find himself most. And I think at this stage of his career and what he has left to kind of give the team now, he's going to want to score goals. He's going to want to get to the front. And actually last night, you could see there was an element there that the players wanted to do for him.
Yeah.
Because this is the one that they're most likely to win. And there's no sure thing. He was in the dressing room and he was rolling the players up and telling them how much he wants to lift the trophy before the end. So it's an area he can play and probably damage teams. Now, he didn't play too well. And, but that can come. There was parts, the early part of the game, like, there was some lovely touches out. There's a good effort from distance, which we haven't seen in a long time from him. So, you know, Gerrard, he's patchy anyway.
That technique seemed to be back there with that long shot.
That was fabulous effort.
He should have scored, though.
But isn't that
the
what
left foot there against the post?
Yeah, 19 years ago, he'd have put that.
I mean, we were talking last week about how he's the second best finisher in the club. You've got to score that. That's a sitter.
Oh, you mean the one across that went on his left foot? Oh,
yeah,
he's on about
the
effort from distance.
Sorry, no, yeah. I don't mean that was a sitter. But the one where he hits the post, I think he's got to score that.
Yeah, and I mean, Gerrard, it isn't. It's not like he's one footed. Like he's always been comfortable on either foot. He tried to bend it. He tried to be too cute.
Yeah.
But Andy
probably recognised that Courtois is a good goalkeeper and I need to put this right in the corner.
But you've said yourself there, Andy, right? He wasn't as impressive as you'd like him to be in that role.
Yeah.
I mean, is it wishful thinking on our part?
It is.
That he's going to be this guy. That,
well, come here.
I have this, and I'm sure a lot of fans is. Gerrard's going to go out on a scream, like he's going to score a few goals. He's going to
hopefully it's on a winning scream.
As opposed to
the scream.
Yeah. Now, look, it is a dream, and the biggest fucking romantic in football is me. Like I'd love to see him lift fucking three trophies. Like you know what I mean? Get top four, get top three, win the fucking league. I'd love it. Yeah. It's like it's solely unrealistic, but there's a point where you say. He can achieve, and of course they can achieve winning the Europa League or winning the Carling Cup or the FA Cup or whatever. You know what I mean? You'd love to see him go out on.
But I think again, when you play in that role that he's playing in, where he's playing as one of the attacking three, you're going to be in and out of games. The trick for him is that when the bit of the game where he's not influencing, that he's contributing. You know, the normal stuff, the layoff, the little passes, the interlinking and the whole lot. And a little bit that let him down last night was sometimes he was giving the ball away too cheaply. So when we got it up to him, when things weren't working out right, he'd make the wrong decision or his pass would get cut out. When, you know, just keep it simple and keep taking over and eventually would make the actual space, because that's what Coutinho is very good at.
But the other thing which Coutinho has and Lallana has and Sterling has, which Gerrard doesn't have, is the ability to recover when you lose the ball. And I think that's where... You know, the dream is that Gerrard plays in this attacking midfielder role and he plays like he was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But he can't do that. So there's still a limitation with him in terms of if he doesn't get the pass right, though, he is a little bit laborious on the ball and someone nicks it off him. He isn't as good at recovering as the other players. Yeah. Now, saying that, if he's going to play anywhere in this team, that's where he plays. Mm. He should never play anywhere
else. I would have liked to see him rotate into the actual central forward position for spells during that game and let Sterling just drop a little and give them a new option. It was sort of even the goal sort of showed it when Sterling was able to drop out another, say, 10-15 yards, turn and run at them. Going back to the bit that we're talking about Markovic, all of a sudden his legs open up and he's able to just ghost boy players and players can't get at him. And, you know, Gerrard can play centrally. You know what I mean? And he will cause an awful lot of problems there because he's a great finisher. You know, and at times his physical presence as well gives him something that neither, say, Coutinho or Sterling would have in that tree as well. And it just keeps defenders thinking, we've gotten used to doing, we have to do something different here now with your man because he's, you know, he can actually knock me off the ball and I'm not going to be able to get around him and sort of shove him off the actual ball.
I've always resisted it as well, the suggestion of it. But watching us play a back three, you do wonder, could he play where Jean is playing, Gerrard?
I think the difference between the two of them is, and it's not youth or anything, I think Jan is a tactically more aware player than Stevie is. And what Stevie does is he turns off to the thing that's going on behind him.
And he just wants to move forward.
Yeah, whereas if you look at Jan, he's constantly aware of what's going on. So even if somebody gets past him, he's looking to get in around where the defender's coming out to cover him, to cover the space that's being vacated.
I wouldn't mind seeing him get 10-15 minutes. You know, if we change formation at the end of a game, we were in. I wouldn't mind seeing... What do you look like back there against, say, the bottom eight sides in the league? Could he play there? Like, you know, perhaps wouldn't play him there.
But, like, that ship has sailed now. Like, he's moving. You know what I mean? If we're looking at extending his career at Liverpool for another two or three seasons, like, generally the way a player goes.
Do you know why I'm thinking of it, though? It's more that if Jean comes out, who's going to go in? I'm going through the list in my head going.
Yeah, we'll get onto that now.
It's a huge dilemma if they lost, say, Lucas to an injury. Does Lovren come in or does Gerrard move back and hold again?
Well, we will look in detail when we're looking at previews about what might happen over the next couple of weeks, and that'll fold all that in.
Better talk about Lucas.
We have to talk about Lucas because he's a guy who's gotten more digs than any heavyweight boxer I've ever seen go through a match from Liverpool fans, and maybe you could say it's been warranted at times, but Jesus, you know, he is central to us at the moment. Would you say that's the case, David? Are we in danger of doing that thing that fans do, which is over-egging something just because we've had a couple of good matches? Or is he genuinely very, very important to us?
Well, if I'm racking my brains as to why it is the case, because I do think he still has the problems that we associate with Lucas, is he's not that mobile.
Yeah.
He's not great at attacking passing. But like even last night, there was like a little dinky pass in from the 18-yard box, and I was like, "Geez, who was that? Was that?" And I was like, "That's Lucas," and I couldn't believe it. But like, what I do think is that the system we have at the moment does just play to the player's strengths, which is that Sacco and Jan step up into midfield and play passes forward, direct passes through to lads running on, Markovic, whatever. So it means Lucas doesn't really have to do that now. So he can just sit back. And then also we have Coutinho and we have Sterling. We have the other lads tracking back, which means that the zone he has to police is much smaller as well. So I think it is a combination of all the players around him make him look a lot better than he is.
Henderson and Coutinho's energy around him are massive part of his sort of renaissance, for sure. But like, I thought he was absolutely solid throughout the game last night and the previous game, and actually looked like he had legs going into the end of the game, Andy. Yeah. Would you say that's...
Yes, and even his pressing late on, like people are saying he loses his legs after 20 minutes. It's completely untrue at the moment. He's had a run of games in the team and he's got his fitness back up. He's still well capable. He's 28. Not a granddad, like. You know, and like... He is playing well, and a good point by Dave there, because years ago when he was playing like as a defensive midfielder and he was running over helping Johnson out right full, or whoever was playing left full at the time on his moped, you know, he used to fly over. He was there in seconds.
Yeah.
Now he's got a smaller space to cover.
Smaller moped.
But he's got a scooter now.
Yeah, he's like a mall cop on one of them. Just nips over, like, and he gets a little foot in, and he's niggly type, like, you know, and there was a couple of occasions where he gave a couple of frees away, but they were further up the pitch. But you couldn't fault them, because he just got stuck in, like. And I mean, you win the ball in that area, that's when the team's going to pounce with Coutinho and Sterling especially, and whoever else is pressing on. So geez, you can't fault them at the moment.
Phil Lucas on a segue, what do you think? It's the future, isn't it?
That'd pay to see. Definitely. Lucas on a Segway buzzing around the pitch would be tremendous.
It would.
It'd have to be an off-road Segway, though. You know the ones with the bigger tyres?
Oh, yeah.
Because you're on the grass pitch. Like, there'd be tracks all over the pitch. Although that could be an improvement on Anfield at the moment, because everyone seems to be giving out about the state of the surface.
Well, can I just say, like, I mean, what he did into the crowd against Villa.
Go on, talk to me about that.
That's amazing. Like, they're the things I love. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? That's amazing. I mean,
why do you love that? It's just because
I like the relationship between the fans and the players, and it was good to see. I know it's only a win against Villa, but to see it meaning so much to the players, and to see it mean, like, I know he slagged the bollocks out of Lambert, but he runs into the crowd. He's fucking coming in his jocks. Like, he's loving it, and he just wants to be with the fans, and then Lucas, instead of celebrating with the players, he's too small to jump up, so he just runs into the crowd.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And now he's just you know,
it's up amazing.
Into cult status level Igor Biscan now. You know, even with the fans, they'll have a song about that. Yeah, surely, you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's one of those moments,
I guess. You know, and the face on him, and he was sore from back, and he's just loving it. And I'd say he's shitting it, but he's just that was good. Like, you know, it's good to see.
Phil, do you want to come in?
Credit to his matters.
Yeah.
Because, like, you wouldn't, of all the players, you wouldn't expect him to go bailing into the crowd.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you would have expected him to join in with the celebrations, or give it the old arm up and the whole lot.
Well, considering he was very protective over his relationship with the fans, because there was that whole thing on Twitter where he
was meant to DM, and all that stuff. But, like, you know, in fairness to him, and going back, like, he's fit in to the way we're playing at the moment. If we're playing any other shape, he's going to be exposed. Let's be honest about this. You know what I mean? He doesn't, as I said, he doesn't have to do as much running where he is at this moment in time, and he's able to conserve a bit of energy when he's on the pitch, because him and Hendo work as a unit. If you go back to when he was playing really well for us in the first half of Kenny's season, and he had even the likes of Spearing around him, but again, it was sort of similar, that we were playing with a slightly higher defensive block. You know, we weren't playing with a high line, but, you know, he didn't have as much space between the halfway line and the back four to cover, and that allowed him, you know, to not have as much work to do. And it's really about, if his workload doesn't have to be huge on the pitch, he looks a better player. If his workload is huge when he's on the pitch, because the gap between the back four and the three that we're playing in, that 4-2-3-1, is so big, he just runs out of legs. I know Andy says he doesn't run out of legs. He does run out of legs when he's asked to do a bigger job that's actually there.
But look,
the two centre backs, because we've got two centre, we're going back, like, because Sacco and Chan come up and don't sit on the 18-yard box and they step up, it's narrowing the space that he's covering all the time, and it means that he's playing more around the halfway line. Like Andy says, when he's giving away his free kicks, he's not giving away around the edge of the 18-yard box now. He's giving them around, you know, the D around the halfway line, and you're not as punishable from that area as you would be if you're giving it around.
Well, if we were making that argument for Gerrard playing well, that everyone else around him is helping them play well, you know, there wouldn't be any of the condescension about it at all. I'm not saying that you are, but there wouldn't be any of this. Yeah, he's doing well considering.
But see, know? The thing is, the system's king.
Yeah.
The reality is, you change that system and play exactly the same 11, and they'll all look poor. You play Coutinho on the left wing, he's going to look poor. Play Sterling on the right wing, he's going to look poor. Play Gerrard and Lucas in a midfield two, or Henderson and Lucas in a midfield two with only a back four behind them, they're going to look poor. Put Skrtel back in a back in a two centre back system, he's going to look crap. Minnelli's going to look crap. So the reality is that you have to give the manager, it took him too long, arguably, when we review the season as a whole, and that might cost us. But you've got to give the manager for credit, because I said this on last week's pod, anyone could play, you could play a back three, but there are ways, as Andy has pointed out, to play a back three that ends up being a back five. He hasn't done that. It is innovative to play Emre Can or Glenn Johnson, even though we hate Glenn Johnson, but to try something there on the right side of that defence and say, actually, I want to do something a little bit different. It takes balls when you've got four strikers on at the club and one of them's injured not to play a striker. It takes balls for all of that.
Yeah, and he solved two problems at once, which is good. I mean, he stopped leaking goals and started to score some goals all at once.
You've got to give him credit for
that. Yeah. Stop leaking goals first, maybe, and then start scoring goals. But it's just, it's happened simultaneously. Like, you have to give him credit.
And let's just finish this whole, review of the thing out with a look at the very top end of the pitch. And Raheem Sterling, after coming back and looking a little bit, let's say, a little bit off the pace against Villa, really did the business for us when we needed him to last night.
Yeah, last night he was brilliant. Like, he plays that role very well. Although, I am looking forward to seeing how devastating him and Sturridge can be as a combo. Like, with Sturridge ahead of him and him just drop back in behind with, say, Coutinho, I think they can be unbelievable. But he's been asked to do that job, and he gave them a terrible time last night, and he was at his best. And I mean, his goal, it was just unbelievable. They frightened the life out of Cahill. It was the type of kind of tracking back away from the player that Suarez used to get all the time, because he was playing him onto his left foot first of all, and then he went shit, and he gave him so much space to shoot. But that's the type of fear that a player like Sterling puts into a defender. So now he was class.
It's a nice combination, David, isn't it? To see the pace followed by that finish on his apparently weaker foot. It's great, brilliant.
But I do think he's starting to kind of learn. So I'm interested to see what happens when Sturridge comes back, because I do think Sterling's only kind of getting into the false nine kind of role.
Yeah,
he's only kind of figuring it out now. But because I think it is sort of find a role is quite difficult to learn. But like, I don't know. Last night when I was looking at it, I was thinking it was flashbacks to the 2010. When Guardiola's Barcelona trashed Mourinho's Real Madrid at 5-0.
Yeah.
And that was when he switched Messi into the false nine. And I think there is, against Mourinho teams, there's a lot of space that you can exploit if you can get your midfield to drop back and force the defensive midfielders up. And if that forces them out of their low block that they're really comfortable in, and there is space in between the lines, which we didn't have last year when we were playing against Chelsea, and they just sat back. Mm-hmm. So we didn't really have that same kind of threat. Whereas I think Sterling did very well, especially to split the two centre and midfielders and then to run in between the lads. Like, when you're running onto them, I think Terry is very immobile. Like, we're talking about immobile players. Terry is very immobile. And him and Cahill look very good because they do have two excellent defensive midfielders in front of them. But I think if you can take that coverage away from them and then just run at them, I do think like Sterling did a great job to make them shit their pants. Like, it was great.
Yeah, but the ball came very quick from the back four. Yeah. Or the back three or whatever, it came up quick. When you have possession football, there's no breaking Chelsea down, because there is no space in between them lines. You can't get in. So the very one time the ball was played forward quick and they just went ready.
Yeah,
they were just caught cold. Whereas if you bring the ball forward, it's impossible.
I think when Sturridge comes back, I think he might slightly tweak it and play more, rather than two behind the one, he might play Coutinho behind the two have, you know, Sterling kind of coming back and forth into
but
the striker.
The trade him, like even the way they're playing at the moment, like when Sterling vacates that area, you know, it's just a busy front three. Yeah, no matter who's in, even when Barini played in it, it's a busy front three. They're giving the opposition defence something to think about.
Yeah.
Whereas before, when we had Lambert up top or Balotelli, It was just how so easy.
Right, let's do that then. Let's look forward and let's look at what the shape of the team's going to be in the weeks to come. But before we do, we have to mention that review there featured both religion and recent football history by David Harker. That's a fucking impressive debut. Right? What's the thought process, fellas, about the game coming up, the two games coming up, as regards selection and prioritising one versus the other, Tuesday versus the second leg? You know, the whole thing about do you save Gerrard for the semi-final? What's the thought process in terms of, we had this exact conversation in the last pod because we had two games coming up. Phil, what do you think in terms of prioritisation, or is it?
It'd be interesting.
Yeah,
because you know, Bolton are what division?
Championship.
Yeah, whatever.
Division championship.
Division championship. Yeah. So, like, you know what I mean? I don't think we should be feared in Bolton. To be totally honest with you, I think we've got enough players that we can change players around, give players a run out in this game, and then have what he considers to be his best 11, because to go down and play Chelsea, because then there's enough of a gap to the weekend match against West Ham.
So you would shake it up, and
like, absolutely, because again, going back, it's a cup game, right? We're at home, it's Bolton. Right now, the likes of Spearing and Heskey are going to be well up for this game because obviously they're coming back to Anfield and it's, you know, a chance to remind Liverpool fans how good they were.
Yeah.
And you know, I just think there's an opportunity to move things around. You know, give I don't know, is Alan close to fitness?
I don't know. Alan's the only one I don't know.
Yeah,
there's been nothing really said about him.
But like, he's had Jordan Williams on the bench and he's also had Jordan Roster on the bench, and I wouldn't mind seeing one of them come into the midfield and give Lucas a rest, because if you look, Lucas has actually done the whole Christmas program.
Oh, Joe made the bench as well, didn't he, recently?
Yeah. So. And, you know, but just, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing him get a rest, even if you want to have him on the bench or something, in case you need him. But like, because again, as what Andy says, he's 28 now. He's, you know, he's already suffered. Like, we've seen that he isn't the most mobile player. If you fatigue him more, you're going to run into issues. You could potentially have more injuries, and he's integral to the system we have, because unless you're going to play Chan there and then you open up, what are you going to do with the back? And you're making two or three changes when in fact you only need to make one. You know, I'd definitely like to see Roster or Williams get a game in the midfield alongside Henderson, because Henderson's a machine, so you don't need to worry about taking him out or resting him. And then up top, like, I'd like to see again moving around. Maybe give the likes of Ojo a chance. Maybe, you know, even if Balotelli has got over his chest infection, give him a game.
Yeah.
You know,
I think it'd be Borini, you know.
If it's Borini, it's Borini. But yeah, change it around. You know, Sterling's had a break. There's no harm in giving, and maybe getting, keep Sterling in.
But with the clear priority being a semi-final, given the fact that we're that far advanced.
Well, look, the thing, you know, we should be able to beat Bolton, and that's not being disrespectful to Bolton. Even if you don't put out a team of kids and you put out a team of your reserve players, our reserve team should be good enough to beat Bolton's first team. And I don't, like, that goes without saying. We're a Premiership team with aims on being in the Champions League places. Our reserve team should be that good.
That's not really a reserve team either, like, because there's a good six there.
Exactly.
Come in and
but I think you can do a rotation without meaning the team's going to be cat. Like, I think Lallana should play because he needs game time after the injury.
Oh, like,
and he's probably at this point in time as good as Gerrard is in that role. Yeah. So if he swapped in for Gerrard, I'd be fine with that. Like, Mankio could come in for Markovic, give Markovic a bit of a rest. So he's only 20. So, like, you can make changes to the team without absolutely ruining everything.
I keep the system, but I changed the whole thing. I keep three players. Mignolet, Skrtel and Henderson will be the only three.
So, terrifyingly, you're introducing Lovren to this and Glenn Johnson.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to play the same team next week as they did last night. It's next Wednesday, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, they're playing on Saturday.
Yeah.
So, still a good few days.
Next Tuesday, I think.
Tuesday.
Yeah. It's Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah. Yeah, it's next Tuesday. And Saturday, 5:30 kickoff. So
what about
Spurs are playing on the Wednesday.
So they get to play on Wednesday both?
Yeah. On Tuesday both, and they play on the Wednesday both.
Yeah. It's normally switched around, isn't it?
No, it's Champions League.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, so it's not the extra day for cover. But I think the same team plays next Tuesday.
I agree.
And he'll make whatever change he can possibly make without weakening the team too much.
Because it's not about the semi-final or the FA Cup. It's about Bolton or Chelsea. Yeah. It's about what's a good, you know, if we were playing Chelsea in the FA Cup tomorrow and Bolton in the semi-final, I'd be advocating playing our stronger side against Chelsea and then mixing it up against Bolton, because we should have enough to beat them.
Well, let me ask you something based on what Andy said. If we are going to play this team, and most of us seem to be nodding our heads in agreement there, is that our best current 11?
The team that played last night?
With Sturridge
in for Gerrard.
Sturridge in for Gerrard. Is that what you do?
Yeah.
Okay. Just curious.
And I personally, I'm going to be Yeah, I mean, there was a point where I was like, I'd probably play Alan instead of Lucas, but the way that he's played, I mean, it's tough to drop him.
It's merit. It's merit. Yeah. He's in there, merit. And he's exactly. If you go back to your best 11, our best 11 would change around over the course of the season because the way players are going up and down in form, and there isn't much between their actual levels between them, right?
Yeah.
So you're basing it on form. So in that instance, it's Lucas has the jersey. It's now up to him to keep the performance levels to retain his undroppable place.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's hard to pick a Liverpool's strongest 11. We're only having this discussion there. I think with Chelsea, you pick that strongest 11 quite easily. Where Liverpool, just sort of like 14, 15 players, and you might change your mind on a kind of a basis over going forward.
I mean, with Chelsea, you
never imagine Lucas was in our strongest. No. Like, I wouldn't have said that before Christmas. No. But it's just he's proven himself.
He
again.
Is now, yeah.
You know,
I'm kind of wary, given the division championship comment, to ask too much about Bolton as a crowd that we're up against.
Well, I did a bit of research, Trev.
Would you help us out?
Did a bit
Dave?
Of research.
Would you help us out?
So they play at the Reebok Stadium. They are managed by Neil Lennon, who used to be a professional footballer who played for Leicester.
Thank you. This is great.
He was a manager in Scotland at some club, and he did pretty well. No, they've actually turned around a bit of form since Lennon took them over. Mm-hmm. They've won 4 out of their last 6.
Big Emil doing the business.
Well, I think that he made a big splash in his first game, but I think actually they're very, very solid defensively. They're going to be tough, you know, tough and dogged, and we're going to have to work really hard against them. And look, it's not a walk in the park. And if we didn't have the semi-final, like if we had a week off after the cup game, I'd be saying play your strongest side here. But, you know,
is Bogdan McShane still in goal for them?
No.
Bogdan McShane.
A man who looks like Bob McShane, the goalkeeper.
As ginger goalkeepers go, I think he's very good. Adam Bogdan, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jay Spearing, club captain there, am I making
Jay
that up?
Spearing is club captain,
Look, so basically we seem to be all come to the same conclusion that Tuesday is a priority and that we feel some sort of a lesser or a more of the reserves on Saturday.
I don't think it's a case. It's back to what we said. It's not prioritised. We have enough.
It is, though.
It's not. We should have enough in the players that we have to allow us to change the team around on Saturday to keep the team that you want to play on Tuesday, the first 11 that you want to pick on Tuesday, fresh for Tuesday.
Oh, put it this way then. Say the thing was reversing, and for some strange reason the football universe got fucked up and we had to play the semi-final first. Then
you played a good team against Chelsea, because you don't need to play the good team.
That's kind of what I'm saying. That's all the ceiling point I was making about priorities. If you put your best side, you save it for that. I would have thought so anyway. What you've mentioned, a few people have mentioned a few names that Lightsey introduced. You mentioned Rossiter, Phil.
Or Williams.
Or Williams.
Or any of the Jordans.
Eddie Jordan.
We are getting to a stage where we could potentially have a team of Jordans.
We have 4, haven't we? We have 4, I think.
Williams, Rossiter, Ibe.
And Henderson.
Or Ibe.
I think it's Ibe. I think we go.
Is it back to Ibe now?
Yeah.
I definitely think he's on a wind up. As to what is
definitely. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's Ibe. Yeah. Oh, okay, Mr. Ibe. No, it's Ibe. Okay, Mr. Ibe.
He's probably got us going there. Actually, there's a man that should play in that game.
No, he's ineligible.
He's ineligible.
He's cup tied.
Good research.
Of course. Good research.
You can stick that into your next article. Unfortunately, Jordan Ibe can't play because he's ineligible.
Yeah, thanks for that. This is wonderful. Yeah.
Which is a shame, actually, because I think that it would have been nice to see him playing in that attacking midfield role. I think it would have been good
Andy, just to kind of put a little bit of a finish on this, on the initial chat on this, a couple of lads have mentioned the system should stay the same, do you think? Irrespective of the personnel that came in?
Yeah, just keep it current, like, you know. Yeah. Keep the players familiar.
And how happy are you about Dave's idea of a back three, which probably will feature the two unmentionables? I mean, what happens there? Do you think?
As in Lovren
and Johnson.
Well, Johnson probably goes and plays on that right wing back.
Yeah.
Oh,
right wing back. Okay.
Yeah.
You don't see him coming in the back three.
No, because this. No, he wouldn't. I wouldn't imagine so, because
he started there against United.
Yeah,
I think he will. That's what I play him.
Yeah. I think he will too.
Would you trust him to track back in the wing back row?
I think if he
Glenn Johnson's a championship player. He's playing against the championship side.
Just think about all those runs that Markovic was making back to cover back, even against Costa and all last night.
Now look,
would Glenson ever do that?
Happen?
Love
and
Skirtle
and
Glenn
Johnson.
He'd offer a little
worst back three ever. Just mockly.
But of the next 7 games, right? This would be the one I would be least upset to lose. So that's my rationale. That I I think this is the one where you have to give the players a break. You have to rest players. We tour is at the African Cup of Nations. So if you're playing a back three, who's playing? Imagine Emery Jean plays and he gets injured.
Yeah, no, it has to be the guys you're talking about if they're fit.
I'd rather it was Glenn Johnson and he got injured.
That's true.
True. Well,
it's hard to beat that rationale, in fairness.
Yeah.
Emil Heskey might do us a favour.
It's a touch harsh, perhaps. But,
the thing is, though, I think that if you put in Jan and Sacco and put Lovren in between them, I think he'd actually be all right. Like, same way as they kind of mind Skrtel.
Yeah,
I think
I agree.
They could kind of just kind of get him through the game. He might get a bit of confidence out of it.
Like, yeah.
Like, it's, I suppose it is a bit
but
risky.
But it's a risk, isn't it, playing those guys?
I think it's risky with Sacco because he has a poor injury. I think he's missed 30 games through injury since he signed for us.
Yeah.
That's nearly a whole season of the game. Did you see Emily Chance?
Yeah,
55-yard crossfield on the deck, the team splitting pass.
Oh,
it was like it was like Moses separating the Red Sea. It was that good of a pass. I was just like, is that going out of play? Oh my god! Yeah. It's just gone straight through.
Do you know literally what it was? Sumptuous.
Delectable.
Yeah. It was.
I just knew your hands were disappearing down the front of your trousers when I was
playing. Oh. He has the ability to get to fizz the ball. Like, it's gone across the pitch at pace, so it doesn't, you know, where these looping balls, like 40, 50 yards, they normally give a defender a chance to get under them.
But this thing was on the deck.
Yeah,
it was like it was on the deck. Yeah. You know, normally it's a crossfield ball. Yeah. It's like, and you're just looking at him.
Back in the 80s, they called it an exoset. That's what they call it.
Yeah. Not to go back on Dejan, but the other thing which I thought was
really
impressive on is, you know, the way sometimes, and I'm not necessarily comparing the two players, but when Yaya Toure gets the ball and runs 50 yards and just nobody can get the ball off him. Jean's got a bit of that.
Right? Yeah. He does.
When he starts motoring, nobody can get the ball off.
Will he be like that when he loses that bit of timber?
You love that shout. That is your shout.
Carrying two stone. He is. Well, come here. But that's the other thing. He becomes an auxiliary midfielder. When he's on the ball and he picks it up there, he actually becomes an auxiliary. He steps into midfield, and it isn't just that he's stepping in to look to give a pass. If he sees a gap, he's gone, and he doesn't mind tearing up to the edge of the 18-yard box.
There's no harm, like, when you've three back there, there's no harm sacrificing one of them getting forward, especially when he's such ability.
Yeah. It's never got a penalty either, by the way.
What?
I didn't think it was a penalty.
I think it was.
Okay, he played well throughout the game, but that was horrific.
No, it was horrific.
Is your man Atkinson reffing the game on fucking Tuesday again?
I just
sweet Jesus, he's a Mongo.
He's shocking.
Oh, like,
penalty aside, he's shocking.
Oh.
Terry doing the Walls of Jericho on. Oh. Like, what are you doing? Yeah.
And he's looking at him. No, play right. No, you're allowed to lie on the player. Hold him by the legs as he's trying to get up. And he's like there going,
yeah, it's the Courtois one, which I thought was the easiest one for him to call. I just didn't understand how
the goalkeeper can't. It's impossible for him not to handle it when he's sliding out with the ball.
And he's outside the box and his arms are around the ball.
He's either not got the ball, in which case he's brought Sterling down, right, which is a free kick, or he's handled. Either way, I don't understand how you don't.
No, he's just very poor, consistently poor throughout that game.
Oh, he's fucking abysmal.
Yeah, and
it started with a bad penalty decision. So,
right, let's get out of this before it gets even more grinchy and get some predictions. David, you're starting today, so we'll start with you. We start with the first game, which is the Bolton match, the FA Cup game. How do you see that going?
I think it depends who's playing up front. I think if Barini's up front, 1-0. If Sterling's up front, 3-0.
Okay, but either way, you see a Liverpool win. That's nice. Dave?
That is bold. I think we'll draw 1-1 and they'll get a replay.
A replay, okay, all right. Andy, how do you see that one going, the Bolton game?
Yeah, I don't see a whole lot of changes, maybe 4 changes. I think you see another decent Liverpool performance and get an early goal. I think they can pretty much run right. Because they're playing, they're on form. So, get an early goal and win 3-0.
Yeah. Okay. I think performance is everything. I think we need to continue playing good football.
Yeah.
I really couldn't give a shit if we go out playing really well.
At the moment, the team are looking forward to going into games.
Yeah.
They'd be looking forward to Saturday. They'd be looking forward to playing against a weaker team now and trying to strut their stuff.
Yeah, and if they do, you reckon it's significant.
Yeah, I mean, that's even Barini. Like, a Barini fucking should be able to have no problem scoring against Bolton.
Yeah.
You hate Barini. It's crazy how much
he's
you hate
the worst
Barini.
Player at the club.
He's not.
He's the worst player
at the club. Anyway,
Phil, he's joint worst player at the club with Nicky Lambert.
Phil, your prediction for the Bolton match?
Yeah, I think we should win.
Yeah.
Yeah, genuinely, look, again, I think, and even for the players coming in, I think. And credit again to Rodgers on this one. He took Gerrard off last night when he could have, when normally he would have left him on for the full 90 that was there, right?
Yeah.
Now, whether that's to rest him or whatever for the weekend, I don't know, right? But what it does say to the players who are looking to get back in the team, that, you know, I'm going to start playing the players that I think is going to get the result here. And if
there's,
you
no
get
a, sacred horses.
There's no sacred horses, no indeed. Horses. And if you get a chance to get in the team, you have to perform now to stay in the team. Yeah. Because I know what my best team is now. You have to change my mind to what my best team is. Because he could have had Lovren on the bench in the last two games and he hasn't.
So, like, Andy, you think that mentality is going to drive us to a
victory?
Well,
if we want to get top form, we want to do well for the rest of the season, that's the mentality that he has to adopt as a manager. And I think he's realised that, in fairness. I think he has realised it. And I think the most encouraging sign was the substitution of Gerrard.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't happen over the last 2.5 years.
Yeah, fair. David, let's go to the second match of the two, which is the second leg of the semi-final. Do you see, let's make it simple, do you see Liverpool going through?
Yeah, no, I think we actually do have a chance of getting through. Mm-hmm. I actually think that it doesn't suit Chelsea that they drew yesterday. I think they're going to have to come out now, and I don't think they're actually particularly great.
Because the 1-1 only does after extra time, isn't that right? The away goal only counts after extra time.
It's
okay.
Not going to be 0-0, though.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be 0-0, but I think they'll come on to us. I think it'll be like a 2-1 or like a mental 3-2 like the Man City game last year, something like that. Like,
so you think it works for us in our favour, the fact that they have to go out. Andy, how do you see that game going?
I see another 1-1. I think this time we'll score first and they might get one back.
Right, so
be a bit like that.
Pens, you think?
It'll just go either way in extra time.
That's what I'm asking, Andy. Give me a prediction.
1-1. 1-1 after 90. I don't do fucking.
I'm not even watching the extra time.
What do I look like? I can barely get them around. My heart's saying that.
Liverpool go through
after 1-1 after 90 minutes and then see what happens.
Brilliant. Dave Thomas, do we go through?
No. I've had this thing in my head about heroic draw followed by heroic defeat, and I just got a funny feeling we're going to put in a really good performance in Stamford Bridge and something's going to happen. They're just going to nick it, though. It's going to be a dodgy penalty like last night that was never a penalty. it's going to be something, and we're going to feel aggrieved about it, but we're going to be happy with the performance. And I just think they're a very, very good side, and the question you've got to come back to is, are they going to play like that again? Is Mourinho going to let them give the ball away as much as they did last night? You know, be pulled about as much as they did last night? Are we going to surprise them like we did last night?
I think you're saying no.
I don't think they're going. Okay. I don't think Liverpool will go through.
It puts us in a tricky position because Brendan Rodgers has to go and do the exact same thing as he did last night. Whereas Mourinho would have identified a couple of areas where, as you say, can't let that happen again.
Yeah.
But on the penalty, actually, Hazard's missing his next penalty.
You think?
Absolutely. Because it's got so much coverage now. The whole world has watched. Oh yeah, look, he doesn't even look at the ball when he's striking it. So the keeper's just going to stand up now.
I love when you commit stuff like this.
It's eminently savable, that penalty last night, if he goes the right way, because it's not in the corners or whatever like that.
Hmm.
What a risky technique he's doing there.
Huh?
What a risky...
Well, Balotelli does the same thing. He watches it, but the one thing that Balotelli does is if the goalkeeper stands up, you know, and doesn't dive...
Yeah.
He then just blends it into the bottom corner.
Yeah.
He blends it.
Well, Balotelli, to be fair, always hits the corner. Whereas Hazard doesn't. He puts it kind of more or less in the middle, either to the left or the right. Yeah. But, I hope I'm wrong. Obviously, I hope that we go through. It'd be great to go through. I think if we get to Wembley, we win it. But Chelsea are a very, very good side.
Right, Phil finishes out. Last night in the post-match, Jose Mourinho mentioned the word Stamford Bridge approximately 7,004 times in the post-match. I think he might have been emphasising the fact that they were at home and they might have the advantage and all that kind of psychological crap. I think that might be the difference for them. What do you think?
Look, the odds are against us, right? Reminds me a lot of the last semi-final of the Champions League we played against them. I think it was 08-09. When we went close to winning the league that year, and it was just a mental toy in Stamford Bridge. Remember Alonso scores early in the fucking game, and it was just like, it was Jesus, we can do this. This was after Reece had scored the og right at the death in Anfield, and it was a 1-1, and it went down there, and the game just went absolutely mad. And then any time we've played a Mourinho Chelsea side in an extra time, they've tend to get the upper hand. Like, if you go back to Rafa's fourth season, it was a draw after 90 minutes, and then they won in extra time. I think they finished up 4-2 in the league cup final itself. So It's got all the hallmarks. If it's a draw after 90 minutes, that you're going to have another one of these mad Liverpool Chelsea semi final second leg ties. But I don't know. It depends on where Mourinho sees his priorities on come Tuesday.
Mm.
You know, he's probably thinking, well, you know what, a draw here, a nil-all draw takes us through to the final. And he is that calculating in terms of the way he looks at games, that he would be as happy to play for a nil-all draw and take it right the way through to the end of extra time at nil-all and go through on the scaldiest of ways to go through. Because to him, that would be a victory in his head for the ghost goal in 04-05.
Yeah. I mean, the wild card is if Sturridge is fit.
Yeah,
that's the thing. If we go into the game with Sturridge, even if Sturridge is on the bench, I think psychologically that's a big thing, and I think that might then give us a bit of an edge. But I don't know whether
the only thing is that if we can somehow, going back to Andy's, if we can somehow manage, if they score first, right, we're not winning it.
Yeah,
and I mean, and the only reason we're not winning it is because even if we get it back to 1-1, I still think they do us an extra time in that way. If we score first, it changes the whole complexion of that game, because they can no longer just sit back and defend. They have to come at us. And even in the system, the one thing that this system has done for us is that we can be very good attacking-wise in possession, as we have been against the shy teams, right? But we've shown that we can actually as well be very effective on the counter-attack, because we have enough bodies around that break, like the likes of Coutinho, the likes of Sterling, when they drop in deep and we go to counter-attack. And even Chan seems to bomb forward when we're on a counter-attack to get up with them as well. So, you know, we've got there's armament in there, because we have got pace and mobility in the side in the way that we're playing at the moment.
Yeah, I wouldn't want Andy to start crying if it happens, but you can see Gerrard putting a free kick in the top corner.
Yeah, I think we're going to see moments like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And getting back to Mourinho, he's fucking mad to manage Liverpool, you know that?
He fucking loves that.
He's mad to fucking manage Liverpool in the ground like that with the fans. Because he's nothing but having pops and pops at like Chelsea.
Well, every club he's managed, the fans have hated it. Chelsea fans love him, but they're all.
Yeah, he winds them up. I think it's just his day.
The gas thing is, if he was the Liverpool manager, right? The Liverpool fans would actually love him.
Of course.
No, I'd hate him.
No, you hate him now because of everything that's gone on, right? Had he taken over instead of Rafa at the time, the way he carries on, the way he would be, I think he would have been one of those cult heroes that you have.
Yeah, you'd have easy bollocks.
He'd buy into the whole fucking Anfield thing. He'd be up around the cop every other week. You know,
running,
what I mean?
Celebrating to it all the time.
Giving it the fucking large.
And you don't think, if you like, consider how the fan base has reacted to the way the fans celebrated, the way the team running to the fans and them celebrating. Yeah. If Mourinho was sprinting the line at fucking big games and giving it the drop of the knees, and he was the manager of Liverpool to the cup, you don't think there would be fucking vines and fucking videos and everything like that?
I wouldn't actually write that off happening eventually. Yeah. I mean, like, Mourinho's went and managed every club with money.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Where is the next place for him to go? I wouldn't rule it. What's the point though? Just win the fucking French League grand.
I think they feel it secretly like that, but
falling out with the Chelsea fans, who were kind of his first love, well, after Porto, like, you know what I mean, and having pops at them, like, I mean, I always imagined Stamford Bridge is a difficult place to go to.
They'll get their A4 pages out soon.
they have their iPads.
I have to say though, I was disappointed to see a bed sheet on the cop about Stevie saying all the best.
Get Gerrard to Wembley.
Get Gerrard to Wembley on a bench.
It was a bit of an embarrassment.
You know, the lads of Cowboy Tickets did the big banner. You know, the one, the best there was, the best there will. Yeah. You know,
the Bret Hart one.
What a flag I did shed a tear. But I don't know, it's fucking,
that's a Liverpool banner.
Yeah.
It's fucking lovely. No.
But I tell you something on Mourinho. If Rodgers had said about Anfield what Mourinho said about Stamford Bridge, everyone would be slaughtering him. Everyone would be going fucking ballistic if he turned around and said, but he wouldn't say it.
No, but I mean, I think if a Liverpool manager says something about a song, the Liverpool fans would actually take heed.
Yeah,
they completely blanked it and sang that song 90 times.
I know.
You know what I mean? And now he's at war with them.
And this is their cult.
Like, this whole thing about
we need a song for Emery,
don't
we?
This is like
song for Emery.
Song for Emery. I think we should use the Stingray song. Emery, Emery,
Stingray.
The only thing I fear now is like a big Stamford Bridge noise, all the plastic flags out, the fake noise, pumped up.
Turned up.
Goal music.
Surround sound. Fake noise. Oh, you know what I mean? Can you imagine?
The end of Arsenal's wall when they were rebuilding Highbury that time to paint on the fans.
Yeah. fucking Galatasaray be like, you know what I mean? And all the pensioners giving it loads and the nappies.
Oh, please let us end on that.
Sponsored by Tima.
Yeah, that's that. We're finished. Jesus.
I am Lou Schware. You are listening to Trippers Chat.
With Trev.
Okay, good to go.
Yeah.
Right, let's have a look at some of the things that have come in from listeners' suggestions for some topics for us to talk about. The first one's from Johnny. And Johnny is coming over to Dublin at the weekend and he's wondering, would anyone have...
Are you bringing him out?
I'm probably going to meet Johnny for a pint, ironically, because he wants to do something that isn't going on the lash. So what would that
you're bringing
be?
Him out for a pint, but you're not going to the lash?
Well, no, yeah, it's just a single pint, Phil.
The mythical one
point. If you bring him for one point, bring him to the Guinness Storehouse because you get a freebie.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh yeah. Okay.
And you can get up and you see the bar that has the ghost and the things.
It goes around and all. And anyways,
and has the windows.
It has
and
the
you
windows
can look out
and the views
over the Dublin, and you can see the views of the Dublin.
The views of the Dublin.
And then when you're finished there, head over to Smithfield and go up the tower in Smithfield and visit.
You're doing a lot of climbing here.
you can get the dart all over the shop.
Just got on the train.
The dart stops in some lovely places.
Where you
can go Kalini Dock and then you can go all the way to Holt.
If you take them out to Holt of a Sunday, they do the all the farmers market and all are out there on the actual dock, and the dart leaves you there at the dock, and you just have to walk out.
And actually, you can get a boat from Holt back into the somewhere.
Tell him to ride somewhere. Tell him to ride the Red Line Lewis for the day. It's a good day out. You'd definitely get a proper Dublin experience there. Yeah,
you'd see many things on the Red Line, Lewis.
You would.
I'll get the dart.
Get the dart.
That's a good one.
Just get the dart,
but don't go as far as Bray. Love to see out there.
That's our three Bray listeners.
If you've gone to Bray, you've gone too far.
Because that's not Dublin, that's Wicklow.
That is Wicklow, to be fair.
So you've gone past Dublin.
Yeah.
But yeah, the dart's a good show.
The dart.
And as we said, bring them up the storehouse and then go over and up the tower in Smithfield and around the Bushmills. Is it Bushmills that's over there?
Jameson's over there.
Yeah.
Time to go to Kilmainham then, around the corner.
Kilmainham jail.
Oh, look at the cultural heaven.
Show them where the English shot all the lads from the 1916 Rising.
In the chair.
The chair, because they stuck there. Wasn't it James Connolly stuck in the chair because he couldn't stand up and they shot him in the head?
Here we go.
It's a cheery place.
And there's a court, there's a working court beside it, so you can see all the lads going in and out of court there as well.
Deadly.
Yeah.
Deadly.
Oh, they have any gardens. Lovely.
Yeah.
And then Copper Face Jacks.
Just around the corner.
And across the road, you've got the Royal Hospital in Kilmainham that holds the, is it the Museum of Modern Art? That's in there as well. And then when you come back out, if you go back across the past Houston Station, you've got the Transport Museum, which is up in the old barracks that's there as well. It's Collins Barracks that's there. Mm. And then that brings you back. Then you can walk down to Smithfield from there and head up the tower.
If you really want to...
walk your way back to the tower.
If he wants to do something really great in Dublin, he should go to Houston Station, get on a train and go to Galway. That's what he should do.
Galway's
epic.
What about... he just looks at the In Dublin magazine or on the website. Mm. And pick something out, because there's always something happening. Because
jeez, we've taken this really seriously.
This is proper tourist
advice. But being from Dublin, you don't do all the great things about Dublin. You just drink, there's those medieval tours and all, isn't there? In Christchurch and that, and then there's the Wally
the
fucking Viking thing.
The Wally Viking.
You get the shout at the public. It's brilliant because they drive along, right, and everyone's like shh shh shh, and they just pull it behind someone, and then they go.
The Viking splash.
And you get a Viking helmet off of that you can wear for the rest of the day because you're not drinking.
How many days are you coming
for? He said he would come in.
I said,
All right, let's move.
But there's some great, like, drinking, boys. There's some good
yeah,
places.
Yeah, but he doesn't want
to go. Does he not drink?
No. He does, yeah, but he doesn't want to go drinking. So that's why
he's only saying that to Trev, not to.
So he doesn't have to meet Trev.
He's basically trying to avoid me, is what he's saying.
Yeah.
Right, let's go on to the next one here. This is from AJM. David, I'm going to throw this at you straight away. Cup of soups, good or shit?
I like cup of soups.
You like a cup of soup? What flavour would you go for?
Just kind of tomatoey based one,
Tomatoey based. Any other cup of soup fans in the room?
Piss.
Well, you like piss flavour, don't they?
No, geez, not for you. No way.
It's up there with Bovril, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the idea of a powder. Like, if you're an astronaut in space, I can accept a cup of soup.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, that'd be even awkward, because how are you going to get the boiling
water? How would
you
drink a cup of soup in space?
Well, you'd have to. Yeah,
you ever thought that?
You shouldn't be drinking soup anyway.
No.
Why shouldn't you be drinking soup?
Definitely,
you
wouldn't want space.
You should be eating soup.
Eating soup with a spoon.
Soup should be thick enough.
It's like drinking it. I had a lovely soup of gravy there the other day.
So you're not having it?
No, you don't drink soup. Drink soup is a kind of a semi meal or a starter. You don't drink it.
Meat based drink.
If you're drinking, yeah.
If Sina can't be doing it wrong.
If there's a nuclear holocaust and there's a choice between that and a radioactive rat, then you'd have the cup of soup.
Yeah.
Just about.
But it just about boiled down to that.
Yeah.
That's about it. Lucy's wondering who's got the best hair in the Premiership or Premier League.
Emre Can.
Is it?
We don't do that there.
Sumptuous.
Yeah, but we like doing it because we can say Emre Can again.
Is there any rival to Emre's throne?
Olivier Giroud is pretty impressive. He's a pretty impressive specimen.
Paddy Power,
all
love
quiffs,
him.
It's all about the quiffs.
Yeah.
Brad Jones hair. Because he robbed that off your man from Lazy Town.
Did you?
Your man from Lazy Town. Badly. What about Sergio Aguero's kind of pull across?
Yeah, yeah, I'm well impressed with that. Now that's
happy with that. Yeah.
Carrying that well.
You'd have to be a South American Premier League footballer to pull that off, though.
Yeah.
Mario Gerrard deserves a bit of praise here. Like, he's kept that haircut the exact same for so long.
He looks like a Lego man.
Yeah,
consistency. He's actually got the lowest hairline in humanity.
Yeah, he does. Yeah,
it comes right down to his eyebrows.
Yeah. They are reserve eyebrows in case anything ever happens on like a birthday.
Yeah.
You know, like if the candles go up too quickly.
There's a picture of Wayne Rooney losing hair in the attic.
Yeah, exactly.
He keeps tweeting pictures of fucking Wayne Rooney's hair. Look, it's still there.
It's horrendous, isn't it? Like Rooney's hair.
What has he done to himself?
Why did he just shave it off? Why not? What's the problem?
Because the size of his head. He'd actually look like a light bulb.
I think it's because he looks like a big cabbage.
Not like an old light bulb. One of those new sort of eco-friendly light bulbs have the extra big bulbous heads on them.
You know what someone needs to do? You know what they're having a little spat on the pitch? Someone should blow out his hair like this if they're blowing a genie gel. That'd wind him up, wouldn't it? Genie gel, why isn't your hair blown off? Looks like it could blow off.
The next one's from Anthony. Anthony wonders, has anyone in the room here?
Or if you pulled up a divot and just put it on his head. Sorry, man. Like a golfer plays the divot, you just pick it up and put it on. There you go.
You gotta go with the inspiration when it strikes, Phil. Anthony's wondering, has anyone ever been told that they resemble someone famous? And if so, who is it? Anyone here ever been told they look like someone famous? And if so, who?
You look like Postman.
Norman Price. We've got on my right here.
Chesney out of Coronation Street.
This is just a lazy ginger show.
It's really lazy. It's borderline racist. Like, you know, if you can't think of anything original, don't say anything. You know,
David, any shouts for yourself? Ever been compared to anyone famous?
I remember years ago when I was a bit more clean shaven and scrubbed up. They said I looked like Dr. Wilson from House.
Dr. Wilson, that's probably a good shout. I don't know the man, but I'm sure that's a good shout. He's a Hollywood actor type. Gotta be happy with that. Yeah. Andy, ever been compared to anyone? No, Phil?
He was in Dead Poets Society.
Apart from Stuart Downing. Apart from Stuart
Downing. Dale Winton. He looks like Dale Winton.
Dale Winton and Stuart Downing is always thrown at me. Yeah. What a fucking combination.
What a fucking combination.
Dale Downing.
That is fucking mean. Next one is from Jay Gray asking, what is the perfect chicken fillet roll concoction? What is the perfect combination of ingredients in a chicken fillet roll?
I'll leave that to the chef.
Andy, you've clearly
got there's only three ingredients.
But you're either going to have sweet chilli sauce in it, taco sauce.
But how is there only three ingredients?
Well, you've got the chicken sauce, and maybe you'll have some sort of like onion or
but it's the sauce really that's going to make it taste different.
Does it have to be a roll, or can it just be rolled?
Chicken fillet roll, he reckons.
Chicken on a big white baguette, like,
I guess so. It's easy. This is,
I wish everyone
easy.
Could see Andy's face right now. He's not happy about this.
I can't believe you've not just nailed this straight away.
The €2 deal is you get a baguette, butter or mayo, chicken and lettuce. I wouldn't go over €2 for hot chicken rolls, so that's my sticking with that.
Chicken lettuce.
That's a very frugal option. I like that.
It gets the job done.
I don't eat the cup of soup or chicken baguettes.
It's the chicken baguettes.
But you know what I see a lot of people doing now with them baguettes is getting the bread pulled out.
Get the bread taken out,
which I think is a great idea because
filling it with gun shells.
That's fucking
and thrown at someone.
It's too doughy for you otherwise. Yeah, these.
It's bell cancer.
Because it all falls out as well.
I'm telling you now, all that dough, that's filling the fucking...
White bread's terrible for you. Yeah. Shouldn't eat white bread.
Yeah. No, but it's the worst of a life.
Racist.
It's the worst.
For fuck's sake.
White bread is being run out of this country. It is political correctness gone mad.
Oh my Christ. Next
but you
one.
Know bread, like bread, no matter... bread is bad for you, Jack.
I don't eat bread, I agree, yeah.
And like a lot of people are coming around to this now, you just don't touch it. Just do not bread.
Ah, that's bollocks.
It's exact same.
I'll tell you what, if I was ever in a position where I got fat and I had to lose weight and I went to go on a diet, I would never be able to give up bread.
People have been eating bread for millions of years.
No,
yes,
no,
that's
the difference. But I tell you what, the difference is, somebody was telling me this recently, the wheat that they're producing now, it's a different type with how it's encouraged to grow, and it's a shorter wheat. What, seriously?
Oh, it's encouraged. Come on, lads.
Let's go. We need to fucking roll out the baguette.
Get into the formation, the baguette formation. Yeah. All of it, baguette formation.
All these new age motivational techniques now. In the olden days, you just shout at them and they grow. And now
look
it's like,
now anyway, Dave.
I got three of you in an envelope.
Playing the wheat podcast of them.
Yeah.
There's a name for the type of wheat now that they're putting into bread.
Wheat.
It can be grown real quick. And
right.
It's cheaper to produce. But years ago, I mean, bread's gone back ages.
Bread does go back ages. Your man Jesus loved bread.
He loved a bit of bread.
And the things he could do with bread.
Oh, fucking unbelievable.
And don't even get me started on water.
I mean,
he's having fish rolls.
To be fair, as fictional characters go, he was ahead of a cook. I've got to give
him that. Oh, man, he put a mean fucking fish roll together. Yeah.
Can you imagine going to his parties? There's nothing fucking here, lads. There's only a couple of rolls and a glass
don't
of
water. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Have at it. Have at it.
Give us a glass there. Wine.
What the fuck?
Imagine being at the Sermon at the Mount, right? You're there for fucking days, you're starving, and it's all there is fish or bread, and you've got a wheat allergy or something. Hang on, mate. You know, is there nothing else? No, bread and fish.
It's a weird it's a weird combination. God. You never have a fish roll, really.
Well, have a fish finger sandwich.
Yeah.
A fish finger sandwich is magic.
Yeah, especially when hungover.
How do you cook all that fish?
What?
How did he cook all that fish?
Fireman, he had a barbecue.
Oh, come
thousands
on.
Of people.
He had an outback barbecue. What people don't know. Outback goes back millions of years.
Yeah, do you know the who Captain Birdseye? Who's that made by?
Birdseye.
Hang on. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. No, it must be thinness or something. Hang on, I need to look this up.
It might be green oil, I think.
It's somebody putting a huge push on fish finger sandwiches on Twitter. Who's the main players in the fish finger, man?
You get the first fish finger sandwich free, but the rest of them are
on the
Captain's
table.
Captain Birdseye. Captain Birdseye, right?
I don't think it's him. It must be Findus. It has to be Findus.
It's his son.
Is there anyone else in the fish finger
green
game?
Green Isle?
In the fish finger game.
Green Isle.
Admiral Birdseye.
I've been a long time in the fish finger game.
But anyway.
A very long time.
Particular.
You hunted Orca at one stage. They wrote a book about you.
I did.
Moby
Trev. They were doing these fish finger sandwiches, right? But they were only bringing them, they were bringing to your workplace. But they'd only bring them to media companies Today FM or whatever. So they get a load of coverage all over Twitter and get the exposure. I was harassing them for a fish finger sandwich for months. To the point that they blocked me. I was like, just give us a fucking fish finger sandwich. Just because I haven't got 1,000 followers, you won't give me a fish finger sandwich. Because they're scabby fucking stingy bastards. They're only bringing them to
I hope Captain Birdseye turns up outside your station in the fucking splash door with a fucking fish finger sandwich now.
And you'd see all these retweets from these half famous people, like Brezzy, Trev. Oh, nice one, yeah, yeah. Nice one for me fish finger sandwich, 50 fucking million followers, happy days.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't fit a yard me walking man. Yeah. Want a fish finger sandwich, like, you know. One fish finger sandwiches.
And you're blocked.
Blocked.
Yeah.
Sort of desperation, like.
Hang on. Like you hate their desperation, but you're begging them on Twitter. Give me a fish finger sandwich. But, give me one.
You know what I mean? How much? Like, how hard would it be for them, the van man, to just come out and give me a fish?
Is that how it works?
The van man.
Is that how it works? They deliver.
The van man. Oh, man.
Finish as per usual with some admin, and we'll start with our weekly shout for our kind host Astro Park. Book your pitch time and play some ball here at astropark.ie. The new edition of Neil Poole's We Are Liverpool fanzine, featuring scribbles from myself and Neil Gray, is now available at weareliverpoolfanzine.com and will be sold outside the ground at the home games, beginning with the Bolton match on Saturday. It's bloody marvellous, and at only £1.50, it's also a steal. Your day trippers tonight were Dave Thomas, David Hartery, Andy Young, Phil Casey, and myself, Trev Downey.
Makes warbling sounds, and goes, oh, that's an amazing sound.
The Cars, Whopper,
Cranberries,
Whopper,
serious band.
Crap.
You're actually running out of people now, aren't you?
No,
the Cars can't sing. The woman from the Cranberries, all right, she's got a distinct voice.
There's loads of good Irish musicians, for fuck's sake.
No, I didn't say
for
bad musicians, sake. I said they can't sing.
There's loads.
That's my thing, is they can't sing.
What about the girl at Little Green Cars? Fucking amazing singer.
I have never heard that name before in my life.
She must be brilliant.
The small Irish bands are up there with, like, per head of population, are up there with the best musicians in the world. It just so happens that we just don't have an industry here.
It's just a sentence.
We don't have
that's
a
sentence. It's just a sentence.
Welsh trumpet players anywhere in the world. Nobody listens to them.
He kind of has you there.
But, like, if you have an up-and-coming
Zimbabwe
artist,
and tin whistle players, seriously, there's only one of them. He's fucking great.
Zimbabwe and tin whistle.
He's a great dancer. The judges on the Voice of Ireland. Two of them are fucking English. Brezzy. For that.
Brezzy. Air Paul Brennan's more famous than that.
You want someone mainstream?
I do.
Hozier.
Who?
Hozier. Fucking incredible voice.
Would that take me to
Hozier?
Yeah.
He That's sounds like he's having a stroke.
Hozier sister.
Oh, your sister.